The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
My good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Your chance to have your say. It's an open line today, so the floor's yours, whatever's on your mind. Call 66 13 68, text or WhatsApp on 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. That story about the condition of the Radnor Follen, the 100-mile route around the Isle of Man, lauded as one of our best walks, which that tourist from Suffolk said is a bunch of... Anyway, it's not what he thought it should be, and not enough accommodation available for one night only. Also, 40 people found themselves in police cells this weekend. And the island's bees... had a bad year last year. Didn't know that. They had a bad year last year. Also, the Southern Hundreds conducting a thorough review ahead of this year's event over the inclusion of sidecars. It follows the decision by the TT to suspend the class for the remainder of this year's TT. Southern Hundred Club said in a statement it's aware of the ongoing discussions and speculation regarding the inclusion of the class at next month's Southern Hundred. Well, it's Monday the 6th of July it starts, and Monday the 6th and Thursday the 9th of July. So, as sidecar regulations for the Southern Hundred align with the TT, the organisers will be consulting with representatives from the ACU, the Autocycle Union, and the government to evaluate the available options. This will include assessing whether modifications can be brought in or if further action is required. It states the safety of competitors, spectators, marshals and officials remains the absolute priority, and a definitive update will be issued in due course. Well, they haven't got long, so it will be interesting. I just wonder what your thoughts are regarding this and regarding the... There was much talk over the weekend on forums and here, there and everywhere about the loss of the sidecars for TT and whether or not this will be duplicated for the Southern Hundred. Anyway, we'll wait to hear with the official word from the Southern Hundred. In the meantime, feel free to have a chat about it. Julian's first with us today. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. A bit murky out there.
Yes. It's extreme fog.
Well, they used to race in it a while ago, and they used to have wet tyres, didn't they? Just on that subject you mentioned, by the way, when I was chatting to you the other day from Gorse Lee, all the information that I got was from talking face-to-face with sidecar engineers. I never even went near a device or the internet. And I'm sure they'd agree with me that the suggestion of fitting a large spoiler high up on the front of a sidecar, which would obscure the driver's vision, is a ridiculous statement, especially considering what they told me was what's needed are splitters low down and venturi tunnels running underneath the sidecar. And also, Ben Birchall mentioned these fixes on a pre-TT podcast, which was to remedy the issues with a new solid aero undertray. So there's all kinds of questions that remain with why they were all kicked out from the TT. But hopefully, the sidecars, hopefully they'll run at the Southern Hundred as the speeds are lower and less affected by weather, and it's far flatter. So I would imagine that the Southern Hundred will be a different kettle of fish, I would imagine.
I mean, the thing is, at the bottom of this, of course, is always money. And the fact is that a lot of privateers are involved in the sidecars. And bluntly, they don't do it for the money. They don't do it for the prize money. It costs them a fortune, Julian, to get here.
Yeah, and you know what? It's the passion. And I tell you, I was looking at a video the other day. Mike Booth, you might remember, he lost a leg in an accident in the 2022 TT on a motorcycle. And he did a video a while ago called Flat Out on the Isle of Man TT. And that's on the 44 Teeth YouTube channel. So he's shooting around the TT course at race speed. He got a pretty good time as well, actually. He's got a prosthetic leg now, and it sounds like a 17-year-old giggling and laughing all the way round. And this is someone that had such a bad crash at Brands Hatch in 2009 that he severed the joint between his pelvis and his spine, had to have two pins through his... So there's a passion there that transcends all of this. That's why I get on a bike in all weathers all the time. So, you know, this, get on a motorcycle.
And this is the point, Julian, is that there are people who are into bikes and there are the rest. So the rest will never understand the passion and the feeling that people like yourself get, and obviously people who are into bikes get, from sitting on a bike, whether or not it's lashing down with rain. They just like being on a bike. And that's, I mean, the TT was likened to me years ago as a football match when everybody's on the same side, that all the spectators and the participants are on the same side and everybody enjoys it. Some people don't get it, some people do. And I think that this whole question of safety with the sidecars, you know, it's divided people.
Yeah, and you know, when you see if a biker comes off on the road, and you know you'll see other bikers, they will get off. You'll be surrounded by 20 bikes and people, you know, coming over. I mean, you know, if you knock your car, you don't quite get the same kind of help, do you? People kind of have a look, or maybe somebody will stop, probably. But it's just a completely different thing. It's hard to relate to people who would just rather just shut the whole thing down without a thought.
And that's part of it. This may be a stick to beat the sidecars with, Julian.
I think so. And I think there needs to be a bit of pushback on all this and find out what happened, why that happened, what are the potential fixes, what are the ACUs saying, do they resist putting different aero on, has there been a mandate for a new aero under tray? So there's all kinds of questions, because we don't want to lose this. And if there's this blanket kind of, oh, you know, in the interest of safety, we're not doing it anymore, that would be a travesty, in my opinion. There's always a fix for these things, or a reversal, maybe, if it turns out that something was done in the name of safety that's made things worse. Just a quick one on the pathways on the island.
Yeah.
The government are basically saying it's too expensive to have more than, is it five people going around all doing the whole of the paths? Yeah, $400,000 was spent on 20-mile-an-hour signage without even consulting taxpayers beforehand. So $400,000 would probably have gone a long way to helping. And I think taxpayers, including you and me, we just want simple things done first. We want a decent road surface, you know, like I seem to remember Port St Mary was touted to have the high street fixed. All it's done is had a bit of tarmac thrown into the potholes, so that won't last long, I wouldn't think. Regular bin collections, and the footpaths maintained. And I'm just thinking, you know, the lower number of hikers, it's only about 5% of tourists, so that's about something around 16,000 to 17,000 people who come to the island.
Yeah.
But they tend to spend proportionally more here. They stay longer. They need the accommodation around the island. And their money circulates through to local businesses.
And also, the fact is that hiking is a lateral community. People hike, people come from all over the world to hike, you know, on internet forums and reporting and what have you. Somebody's going to read this. Somebody somewhere who was thinking of coming to the Isle of Man to walk the Radnor Follen will look at that and think, I'm not bothering now.
Yeah, and what they'll do is they'll have a look at the competition that we've got, like the Pembrokeshire Coastal Path or the West Highland Way or the South West Coastal Path. So will they consider, well, it's an expensive ferry and, you know, we can have a similar view from the Pembrokeshire coast, or even though it's not a similar view, but you know what I mean. And are we going to lose more than just financially? Are we going to lose reputationally as well?
Well, the thing is that when you set yourself up as being world-class with the Radnor Follen, and it used to be world-class. When you could walk round it, it was world-class, and it showed the Isle of Man off at its very best, rain or shine. It was fantastic. But the trouble is, as you say, it's a bit like potholes in the road and crumbling sidewalks, pavements. It's a bit like infrastructure that doesn't work. There's no point having the stuff in the first place if you don't keep it up to snuff.
And also, I'm kind of curious as to the argument that there were problems with the TT closed roads, therefore we can't have the sound bus, which actually was taken away and then put back again as the 8S service. But it's not available during TT. Can you imagine on a day like this when the bikers don't particularly want to be out on the bikes? They could all pile on and get down there and see a very iconic area of the Radnor Foiling, couldn't they?
Well, there you are. You see, that's the case that you've put. We'll wait to see what the government does in this case, because the fact is, words don't do anything. Words don't clear paths. And, you know, we have nature now at her kind of most conducive to stuff growing. It's warm and it's well watered. It's going to grow.
Yeah. And you know, the chap that spoke about this from Suffolk, he said that a lot of the signs are either not there, or they're pointing the wrong way, or they're in terrible use. Well, we've got 400 grand's worth of poles now, haven't we? So perhaps they could put some new footpath signs up.
Okay. All right. All right. Thanks, Julian.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
All right. 16 minutes past 12. Well, the condition of the island's footpaths is often a hot topic of conversation to date. No different. The Isleman's most famous footpath, the Radnor Foiling, a 100-mile route that goes all the way around the perimeter of the Isle of Man. But Bob Jones from Suffolk says the island's letting itself down because of its condition. He set himself the challenge of walking the whole thing, and he's 80, but he said it's badly maintained, poorly signposted, and there's not enough accommodation available for one-night stays. This is Bob Jones.
I come from Suffolk in England, and I'm here to walk the Radnor Foiling.
Was that the sole reason that you came here?
It was. I've been to the island twice before, and I was determined to try and walk the whole thing. I think I'd done about 80 miles. Started in Douglas because I came over on the ferry. I walked to Laxey first night. I camped at Laxey, and then I walked to Ramsey, camped at Ramsey, and then I walked from Ramsey on the dreaded beach. It's a nightmare. All the way up to the Point of Ayr and down the other side. And I think I did about 16 miles in total on the beach, and that really is a killer.
The path itself, how has that been, and the quality of it? Has it been well maintained when you've been walking around?
I was surprised how little used it appears to be. Even in Douglas, I walked along the promenade in Douglas, and then you go up the hill, and the route takes you round the front of the houses on the sort of headland there, and it was completely overgrown. I don't think anybody had walked it this year, and it was brambles and nettles, and I was having trouble getting through it. There were lots of other problems, I think, with the walk, and it's mainly down to signage. There are places where an essential sign is missing. I say essential because it is a turn, and you have to turn at a certain point, and the sign is gone. No sign of the sign. There's many other places where the sign is damaged, or one of the arrows is broken off. The signs that have fallen down, signs that are pointing the wrong direction. It strikes me that nobody has bothered to go out and survey the signage. Surely, if it's something that they want to promote as an attraction for the island and to get people over here to walk it, then surely they ought to be checking it out and making sure it's up to date.
What message do you think it sends to people if it isn't very well maintained?
Well, it doesn't look very good on the island, does it? The island is letting itself down by promoting something that isn't very good at the moment. It's disappointing for us all, I think, and you come here on the basis that you're going to do a fantastic 100-mile walk, which I was really looking forward to. I've reached the age of 80, and it was a big personal challenge to try and do 100 miles at 80. I'm going to finish it, but it's not easy.
Bob Jones and his story of the Radnor Foiling. Well, spokesperson for the DIY said it recognises how valued the Radnor Foiling is to residents and visitors alike, and is actively working to prioritise maintenance across the network, whatever that means. However, it says despite £700,000 worth of capital funding being allocated over the next 5 years to help maintain the route, there remain revenue and resource shortfalls, whatever that means, which impact its ability to manage and maintain the route. It also says it's important to recognise that certain parts of the route are intentionally more challenging, which forms part of the overall experience, with guidance being clearly provided at Jerby Beach, saying it's more demanding. The DOI finishes by saying it remains committed to ensuring the Radnor Foiling continues to be a flagship outdoor asset for the island and a safe, enjoyable experience for those who view it. Now, you can see their full statement at manxradio.com. I'd just love to know what revenue and resource shortfalls mean. We've also approached Visit Isle of Man, which is the kind of the remnants of the tourism board, which promotes the island. On its website, Visit Isle of Man says the route is our premier long-distance footpath with some of the best coastal walking in the British Isles. It also says there are plenty of accommodation providers available for walkers making their way around the island. We've also asked Visit Isle of Man to respond to Bob's comment. If you're in the business, by the way, I'd like to know, is it easier to stay for one night? Well, obviously, during TT, that will be a challenge. But, I mean, is it easy, or does everybody kind of now want 2 and 3 day stays? So if somebody like Bob is walking around, then what can they do? Can people stay for one night here, there and everywhere? Walking is niche tourism. Let's be fair about this. It's a niche tourism. But then again, other things are niche tourism. Railway visitors are niche tourism. And they notice when things aren't right. Perhaps notice when we've only got a halfway horse tram. They notice. And we've got lots of niche bits, if you like. Our Viking offering is niche tourism. Our heritage is niche tourism. But you put all these little niches together and they make one big industry. But the trouble is, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And if we let ourselves down with this flagship walk, footpath, then what does it say about us? I mean, genuinely, what do you think Bob will think about the Isle of Man? When he goes back to Suffolk, flat Suffolk, and he thinks about the Isle of Man, what's he going to remember? A kind of tawdry path that he had to fight to get round, or everything else? Well, hopefully he remembers all the good bits. But human nature's human nature, isn't it? Costs a lot of money to get here. And perhaps you're not a walker. But if you were a walker, what would you think? If you were going to visit somewhere, whether it's the Lake District or the Pennine Way in Yorkshire, wherever it is, in Snowdonia or to the Cairngorm, somewhere like that, and you were going to go and walk, and suddenly it was tatty and the signs weren't there and they were bent and they were broken and it was overgrown. What would you think about the people who put that together? And not least the fact that they were then selling it to you, saying it's brilliant. Here's Juan now. Hi, Juan.
How are you, Andy?
Well, I can't see anything, to be quite honest. Land ho!
Well, it's this extreme fog. I think it goes with that extreme wind that we have here as well, that no one else has.
World-class
wind.
It's
marvellous, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. I mean, that there fog just drifts around the whole of the House of Keys. And no one can see anything that's going on.
It's Manannan's cloak. That's what it is.
Manannan's cloak. Yeah. I was up at the fan zone yesterday. Fantastic up there yesterday. What an atmosphere. I've never seen it so busy up behind the grandstand in the fan zone. I think they've actually a bit of tweaking over the years. They've actually got that kind of a little bit right there now. A lot of people enjoying the atmosphere up there. So I've got to say that was pretty good. Taking a few years as well. I was talking to a tourist this morning who's over for a short period for the TT from New Zealand. It was interesting. He got talking about different things in politics. And they kind of have the same problem as what we do over there with it. And he came out with a fantastic saying, Andy. I don't know if you've heard it. Post-turtle. Have you ever heard of post-turtle? He said, they call high executives in government.
I think we'll try and get Juan, your signal's breaking up. We'll just get you back, Juan, on there. But I think somebody's kicking the wire outside where you are. So let's get Juan back. Well, we'll talk to Eddie first. Hi, Eddie.
How you doing, Andy? All right, mate?
Very well, thanks. Have you been out walking?
Certainly not at the moment. I've done my back in.
Oh, no.
No doubt when it's better, I will be. And I'd like to offer Bob, when he gets down the southern end, if he wants a bed for the night, he's welcome here for free for one night. I just can't understand why, you know, we've got this problem. We've known this problem for years and years. But surely, if I was in catering or in the hospitality business, You must have at least one room that you can make for one night only. You know, cater for all, blimey. This one-track greediness of £200 a night, that is ridiculous, you know. It's summing the Isle of Man up and giving us a bad name like the other boys that have been on have said. Mm. Get your act together, Isle of Man, come on. All right.
Okay, all right, Eddie, good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure.
What was the story about bus vanning yesterday, says James? There were lots of services affected in the morning. No explanation. Can we find out, please? And it, well, we've asked bus vanning for further information regarding this, and they're yet to respond, but there were lots of cancellations, lots of services affected yesterday. Terry Kay said, I wonder how many of our MHKs or future MHKs, wannabe MHKs, have given thought to how many years of low energy usage it will cost to manufacture and erect 87 wind turbines for our offshore wind farm. Terry Kay, that is. Well, that's all down to Orsted, isn't it? Would reverting to how the sidecars were configured last year be a good starting point for the Southern 100 in 2026, says Pete? Well, the trouble is we don't know. I mean, presumably the people in the know will know if there's been any change, whether the setup's different and the configuration is different, but we don't know. This is the first step in cancelling the TT, says John. Cancel the sidecars, then the high-powered bikes and so on, slowly killing it in the name of net zero. And Bob the Marshal said the caller doesn't understand the aerodynamics of splitters and floors that create downforce. They work well until there's a lift at the front, at which point the vehicle effectively becomes a wing. Remember the two Mercedes cars at the Le Mans 24 Hours that became airborne with one looping over and landing on the trees. He's correct about the speeds and the course at Milan for sidecars. It should be made safe, says Bob. I think we've found Juan now. Hi, Juan.
Let's try again now. They're trying to cut me off, Andy. Are you there?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Loud and clear. Yeah, you're just talking about the sidecars. I found it quite interesting that they've cancelled the whole class. I mean, normally if there's an accident, you do a review on the accident, but it seems to be quite a popular opinion around the paddocks and areas about the fitting of a new solid under tray, which a lot of them have been made to put on this year, and that's what's given the lift.
Right.
Which I find it quite interesting that, you know, the ACU have stopped the whole class and it's going to be looked at for the future events this year. So there's something there which obviously is concerning with a number of bikes if they've cancelled the whole event. That's kind of my thinking on that, rather than just one. I'm sure it will all come out in the washer. Look, I was talking to a tourist that was here yesterday for the bikes, or this morning actually, from New Zealand. And he was talking about the term that they use there for some senior executives and government officials called post-turtle. Have you ever heard of the term post-turtle, Andy?
No, I haven't. No, what does it mean?
No. In definition, it says, I looked up this morning, it said, a post-turtle is a turtle that finds itself on a post very, very high up and can't do anything about it. And in definition, it's it didn't get there by itself. Someone had to pick it up and put it there. It has no idea what it's going to do while it's there. It's out of its natural environment and completely helpless. And you wonder what kind of idiot put it there to start with. So that's quite a good determination when we're talking about certain things on here.
Yeah.
My main subject was the co-op, Andy, at the moment.
Yeah.
And we spoke about the co-op, I think, last year, about them putting meat in locked containers that you had to go in and get it unlocked at the counter. But I was in the Onken one last night, and it's the checkout has gone totally automated.
Oh, crikey.
This like massive like system that they've got there with recognition for smoker for cigarettes and stuff like that. But the more concerning was, and this comes from the staff as well in Ramsey and Onken, they've been told to actually stand back away and let people try and navigate this system and only step in to help if necessary. And I think that's so unkind, especially the smaller stores like Onken, where a lot of older people rely on going down there. They communicate with the staff, they talk to people. And this is kind of an unfriendly approach from the co-op to actually put every single checkout on this system. And actually stand back away. You've actually got to find a button to press to help someone for help. And I mean, I know this is the future that they're trying to push down, but it's the same as the post office, isn't it? The generation that's around, the older generation, they go out and communicate and talk to people and they want to get served. And I think it's so unfriendly that the co-op are taking this attitude with, you know, like locking the meat up. And now this system, and I'm very non-challenging, Andy. I made my point clear while I was there a few times.
Yeah.
And, you know, the staff, some of the staff actually are engaged and say, yeah, we've actually had people who we've lost. They're not coming back to the store anymore. Yeah.
What amazes me about the co-op is, and certainly the one in Onken, is that the checkout is miles away from the door. I mean, it's. Yes. I mean, I don't want to say everybody's a shoplifter, but there's no way you could stop anybody shoplifting at Onken Co-op, also the one in Duke Street in Douglas. The checkout is, it's way to the left of where the doors are. And I personally, I'll be honest with you, and I've queued up in the Co-op in Duke Street, I've seen people steal stuff and walk out with it. And I've mentioned it to the people behind the counter, and they look at me, gone out.
The shrinkage must be quite big, because if you look at the whole new concept of the Marks and Spencer's food hall, it's the same. If you want to go out through the front door, you've actually got to walk back through the food store to get out the front door.
Yeah.
So it's exactly the same concept. The shrinkage must be absolutely phenomenal in there for doing that. But at least Marks and Spencer's, they've still got a cash payment area and someone that will help you. But I think, and they've told me that they have lost people. People have walked out of there now in the co-op and not walked back. So people need to really vote with their feet again with this and say to these stores, well, we're going to shop somewhere else. We're going to go to farm shops and we're going to go elsewhere and shop and let them know that they don't want this. That's the only way forward. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes,
well,
Andy.
We'll see. Good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us today. And Andrew's with us now on Manx Radio on Man in Line. Hello, Andrew.
Hi there, Andy. Good day to you. Today, please, flag gate.
Which flag?
The story. The non-flags at the grandstand.
Ah, right.
So my best reading of what I've been able to find is that there's no flagpoles, no flags, because the poles and the fittings were condemned. And so I've also read that, and I hadn't noticed this, maybe somebody else will say whether it's correct or not, the poles had been left up all winter. So instead of taking them down, they've been left up in the high winds, and all the fittings now apparently are not serviceable or not safe.
You see, Andrew, so somebody decided to do that, didn't they? Somebody last year decided that we're not going to maintain them, we're not going to take them down, they're going to be left up all winter. And surely it would have occurred to them that they're going to be knackered by the time we get to TT 2026.
100% agree there. So they were, what I've been able to read, find from reading various posts on social media, is that they was inspected at the beginning of April, and in April it was discovered, inverted commas, that they weren't going to be safe. And so now there's an issue, and I have seen some ludicrous figure of £4 million somewhere. I can't put my finger back on it now, but to replace this, to the fittings and everything.
£4 million.
Well, let's have somebody else come on and give us a figure, because I think I saw £4 million, but I can't find it now. So, but I mean, what is going on? Who is the person who agreed or should have said, get the poles down for the winter? Who was that person? Who's in charge of the maintenance? And who's now not competent, basically, because that's what it comes to, competency and accountability. Who is the person in the DOI that's responsible for this? Can we have the name? And this person is obviously not competent enough to be in that position. They have to be got rid of, and they have to find somebody who can do this sort of job.
Well, you see, the point about flags is you've got to see the darn things, and surely somebody realised that flags are useless if they're just wrapped up. They've got to be on the flagstaff. They've got to be there, and so people can see them. So, who on earth would think it doesn't matter? I mean, as you say, you wonder who it is, and if there's going to be any sanction for this.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like the footpaths, they've got 700 grand over 5 years, and yet now they bleat and say they don't have the revenue resources, revenue or whatever, to be able to maintain them. It's all just word salad, and nobody is held accountable. I thought there was a specific team to maintain the footpaths. So what is that team doing with its 700 grand? I mean, you know, are they in a tea room somewhere having tea? Is this just like the people who are responsible for the grandstand sitting behind a desk somewhere and not actually going out and looking at things and deciding work needs to be done and getting work people to actually do it? No, because they're sat behind a desk taking some ridiculous salary, and this is what happens. Comes back to managed decline.
Yeah, and the other thing is that if you have a guest over or if you're entertaining people from across, we're responsible for this. What I'm saying is that we have to make excuses for this. When somebody says, "Where are the flags?" or "Where's the scoreboard?" we have to then think of an excuse to make up, and we end up just grinning and looking to one side because we can't think of anything to say.
Well done, Andy, for mentioning scoreboard. Where is that? Okay. Who's the minister responsible? I think it's Mr. Crookall, isn't it? Mr. Crookall, come on. Please tell us what's happening about a scoreboard.
Okay. All right. Good to hear from
thanks,
you,
Andy.
Oh, by the way, thanks for bringing up the Arwood Hall thing. It's completely legal. He's just very, very interested in local politics.
But it's wrong that somebody like that should be in two constituencies. Imagine if an MHK was going to stand for two constituencies.
Interesting. Well, it's obviously never happened before. That's why it's suddenly come up. But anyway, thanks for raising that. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Andrew.
Cheers, Ben.
All right, 23 minutes before one. Big John in Ramsey said, I think we're at a point now where vehicles and motorcycles are travelling so much faster over the mountain road that cycles should be banned on the mountain road all year round. My grandchildren all ride bikes, and two of them are in a cycling club, but they're not allowed on the mountain because it's considered too dangerous. Do we have to wait for a serious accident before action is taken? Another John said, I'd like to apologise on behalf of Manx taxpayers for the state of the footpaths and the condition of Strand Street. Absolutely filthy, says John. Douglas Council should be ashamed of the current state of the area. Well, actually, coincidence, at the end of this month, Devon Watson's on. The leader of Douglas City Council will be on Tuesday the 30th. So he'll be on 4 weeks tomorrow. TT is one of the busiest times of years for Manx Telecom. And there have been comments about poor internet coverage during TT. Manx Telecom said that some customers may experience connectivity issues. Manx Telecom teams actively monitor performance throughout and will continue to make adjustments wherever possible, they say. This is from James Qualtro, who's the digital services lead. James says, we take all reports seriously and will encourage anybody experiencing difficulties to get in touch with us directly so we can investigate. Call the customer support team on 624 624, visit the store in Douglas, speaking to a member of the team, or you can view network status at manxtelecom.com/support. That's manxtelecom.com/support if you're having connectivity issues with the internet. Peter's with us now on Manx Radio. Hello, Peter.
Oh, hello. Good morning. Oh, good afternoon, rather. It's Peter Murcott here. Now then, it isn't the subject you'd probably think I'd normally talk about. It's really a consideration for the fact that in the Isle of Man, when we have a general election, some degree, it's a vote in the dark. You see, however good your local member is, your local member is only just one person. Parties, political parties, have never really taken off here. And so nobody knows what sort of form the new administration will take. You don't really know what its aims and objectives are going to be. And even if you get a good member, one who puts forward all kinds of policies that you approve of and you would like to see implemented, you can't guarantee that they will happen. And so it seems to me that in the distinctly different situation that we've got in the Isle of Man as opposed to the UK, where, of course, you do know what policies are being promoted or will be promoted if a political party gets in, it seems that there is a good case for having referenda in the Isle of Man because it's got a distinctive situation. And it would also keep the administration more accountable to the electorate and where they've got to pay close attention to public feeling. And so I think that that's something I'd like to see debated and being put forward, especially on certain issues that have come to the fore. We all know what they are. They're ones that dominate a lot of the airtime on the Man in Line, yeah, about windmills and so on. And there would have been prime examples, I think, where the public at the end of the road should exercise, have their, an opportunity, yeah, to make their views known. You see, public consultations, they've been rather overdone, and they are ineffective. For example, you see, talk about the TT and Sunday racing. 2 years ago, they had a public consultation. About 1,400 or so people responded, 60% plus, did not want Sunday racing for various reasons. And so what has continued? Sunday racing, and in actual fact, it encroaches more and more on the time on Sunday, and there's a good example of how consultations really don't have the sort of effect that they should. And so I think the time has come, especially on the question about this whole climate change, windmills and everything that's been talked about, now to have some opportunity for the public to be able to have, if you like, the final say, which I think they should have.
Would you like a referenda, let's just say, would you like them as and when, or let's say specifically every year or every two years?
No, I think it's a subject that's got to be looked at very carefully. I think you've got to have, you can't just have them casually happening all the time, not only because of the expense, but because it would then push things the other way.
Yeah.
It's got to be very, very carefully balanced. There is a Referendum Act of 1979, but it needs sort of dating. I think it's something that's got to be considered. It needs a lot of discussion as to what form it would take, what would be the circumstances on which it would arise, what steps would have to be taken, and most importantly, how the question would be put and who would decide it. All those, that's the fine detail that would need to be discussed. But I'm just talking about the principle. And I'll throw another principle in as well, I think. Because of our particular circumstances here, I think that the House of Keys election should take place every 4 years and not five. I think five are too long. I think 4 years, because we don't have the same really participation as they do in Britain and the same effect, because we don't know what sort of administration we're going to get and who's going to be the chief minister and so on. I think 5 years are too long. I think a year taken off would bring the whole system closer to the people.
Okay. All right. Appreciate your call today. Thanks, Peter.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, then. Bye-bye.
All right. 16 minutes before one. Jason Morehouse dropped us a note in just to say, I received this almost unbelievable update last night from the former airport director regarding replacement flagpoles. This is from the former airport director. Before I left, I had asked the team to look at suitable contractors and suppliers for replacement flagpoles, and colleagues were seeking advice regarding specifications. It turns out these aren't commonly available items. The cost of a single 5x3, 5 foot by 3 foot Manx flag is £89. Multiply that by 45 flags on Douglas Prom. This is Jason Morehouse. This is L who dropped a note in just to say, when the flagpoles at the grandstand at airport are eventually replaced, the flag should be raised at sunrise and lowered at sunset each day. They shouldn't be left flying 24 hours a day. They become tatty and tangled. David said, regarding the co-op, it's the same in Port St Mary and Port Erin. People, including me, have said they won't be going back. I think management have made a big mistake. This is obviously something from the UK, isn't it, where they've imposed these serve-yourself things and what have you. I'm an older person, but I don't use checkouts for the social interaction. I'm quite capable of using automated tills, but I just don't want to. I want to relax while somebody else looks after the barcodes, weighs the fruit and veg. I wouldn't want to use a fully automated do-it-yourself shop, says H. It's relaxing for somebody else to do it. The co-op on Woodburn Road was rude to me. A member of the staff standing outside pointed at me and told me to move on. I felt the way I was spoken to was disrespectful and unnecessary. There are too many races at the TT now, says Dave. There seems to be an obsession with lap records, even during practice sessions. I'd get rid of the superbikes, which only a few riders can afford. The superstocks are supposed to be based on the best road bikes, yet they only do 3 laps. Not much of a test, is it? Says Dave.
A new chapter has begun at Swiss Chalet Glen Helen with the Isle of Man Farm Shop. Celebrating local Manx produce, IOM Farm Shop brings together the island's farmers, fishers, growers and makers with a boutique shop and fantastic deli takeaway service nestled in the island's most beautiful valley. Open Monday to Saturday, 9:30 to 5:30 and Sundays 10 till 4. The Isle of Man Farm Shop. Visit farmshop.im or find them on Facebook.
1986.
At Manx Glass and Glazing, we're celebrating our 40th anniversary. That's right. Manx Glass and Glazing have been delivering quality and stylish aluminium and UPVC windows and doors to the island since 1986. And we've spent 4 decades committed to developing our community, including investing in future generations through our apprenticeship scheme. Visit our showroom on Snugborough Trading Estate and see why we've been helping the island for 40 years. Trust Manx Glass and Glazing. Quality and style since 1986.
SMS Trading. New and second-hand furniture from flat pack to fully built. See our range at 3 St Paul's Square, Ramsey. All-island delivery and man-in-a-van service available. Call SMS Trading on 315151 or find SMS Trading on Facebook.
A new era of private healthcare on the island is just beginning with Clinique Savoie. Clinique Savoie is the island's first truly integrated private healthcare service. So from health checks to GPs, specialist consultations or connections to UK specialists, you'll experience care that's connected, considered and personal from state-of-the-art clinics in Douglas and Ramsey. Take the next step in your guided health journey. Visit cliniquesavoie.com or call 682000. Thoughtful island healthcare, expertly delivered. Clinique Savoie.
Playing with crypto will make you rich, right? Look, a celebrity is posting about it on social media, so it's got to be safe. And now, oh, you're only a click away from a fortune. Go on. You've just been scammed. Online scams are everywhere. Fake crypto posts, wild claims, pressure to act fast. It's not a game. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. Always verify the people trying to take your money. A message brought to you by Isle of Man Bankers Association, Financial Crime Partnership, the Isle of Man Constabulary, and the Cybersecurity Centre for the Isle of Man. For further information, visit csc.gov.im.
The countdown to the 2026 general election is officially on. On Thursday, the 24th of September, you'll get to have your say on who should represent you in the House of Keys for the next 5 years.
But what are the things you really want to know from your candidates? How they feel about wind farms, what they do to improve healthcare, or how they plan to tackle government efficiency? Whatever it is, if you have a burning question for those standing, we want to hear from you. You can find out how and everything else you need to know about the upcoming election on our dedicated election website. Just head to manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
Well, Faster Mike, good afternoon. 11 minutes before one. Howard's on now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. Just carrying on from a remark you just made a second ago on behalf of somebody that was writing in. The flags at the airport on the roof used to be raised in the mornings and lowered in the evening, but this was done by the luggage handlers who were then employed by the airport. Nowadays we have contractors, and I should imagine that the insurance that the airport have for their staff, employed staff, has disappeared, because contractors will have to pay their own insurance and their liabilities will be different.
Right.
So hence the easiest way was to shove a flag up on top of a pole and leave it there. And but in due respect to the people of the island and the Manx as a nation, those flags should have been raised and lowered on a daily basis. As I say, they always were. And Ian Moffat, ex-RAF man, who did a lot of good work down there, he made sure that those flags were flying on a daily basis. But Ian's long since retired. But this is the things that the DOI, somebody within an office, and all the fancy names they're carrying themselves now, they'll have their management teams, but they won't have anybody working.
Right.
They'll all be sitting in an office somewhere or driving around in a van. And they haven't got a grasp of the situation. That's a classic example with the Radna Fallon. David Cretney was one of the instigators there, and it was built up as a tourist attraction, like a lot of other things. One in particular, which I know very well. And they all seem to be having this neglect, and that is just coming from within the DOI. The people of the island are noticing it more and more because of the people coming to the island, and the people coming to the island are pointing this out.
Well, but I'll take no notice of your modesty, Howard, because I know you're talking about the camera obscura. And obviously the Victorian Society, and I know for a fact, I'm reading between the lines here, but everybody involved in the Victorian Society and the volunteers love the camera obscura. You tend it,
yes.
You paint it, you clean it, you sweep it, you sell it to people, you show people round, and that's really what tourism is about. You've got to love what you're doing.
Well, only recently, last week in fact, I was up there on the Saturday, and the weather was inclement, so we were letting the people just go in. There wasn't an awful lot, but I had a couple. I was on duty and had a couple there. They were from Australia, and they'd been sailing up through in their own boat, and they were going to Belfast, but they thought, well, let's pass the island here now. We'll call in and see. But when they got here and we were talking to them, they had a friend who had left the island over 30 years ago and emigrated to Australia. And they said that they were coming here to visit. And that person in Australia sent a message back, well, since you're there, go and see the camera obscura. And they did. They came up and they stayed there the best part of an hour, just chatting and various aspects of all around the area.
Yeah.
And damn it all, didn't another Australian turn up. And he was travelling around, just wandering around basically the world, and he'd heard about the camera obscura, and he turned up. So we've got people coming from all parts of the world.
Yeah. And that's the point, that if our tourist offering isn't spick and span and smart as paint and staffed by people who really like it and will sell it, there's no point in having the thing there. If it's ramshackle and run down and nobody's interested, who's going to go to that?
Nobody. nobody. Well, you mentioned it quite a few times about the House of Menannan. I went down there when it first opened up, and it was magnificent. My wife and I, we spent a long time down there having a look around. But I haven't been down now because it sounds so unattractive, I won't even bother going to Peel to see it.
And that's the thing. That's the thing, Howard, is that you remember it when it was cutting edge, Anthony Quayle, the voice and everything.
That's
it was
right.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody used to love it. But the trouble is, you kind of grit your teeth if you ever take a friend or a visitor to the House of Menannan. You almost do it out of sympathy. And obviously, everybody at MNH knows this. They all know it. But the trouble is that nobody's breaking the logjam. Something somewhere has got to be done to bring the House of Menannan up to spec.
I think you were involved personally, correct me if I'm wrong, with the Radio Caroline exhibition that was down there.
Yes, I was, yes.
Yeah, and that was excellent. And these are the things, they're niche, but the people who are looking after these things, the DOI, Manx National Heritage, they don't seem to be able to grasp this. They're living in a silo. Oh, Lord, I've lost it. But anyway, environment. And they just look out a window. They've got to go round these places and visit them themselves and look at it in the eyes of a tourist, a visitor. And that's the only way you'll get anything done.
OK, all right. Howard, we appreciate it. Thanks for being with us today.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye now.
Alan said, as a regular Glen walker with my dog, I've noticed there's very little maintenance being done. Private contractors seem to do some small jobs rather than the maintenance crew. And Ian said, and it strikes me that things seem better before digitalisation. All this increased technology doesn't appear to be providing the level of service the public will expect. The thing is, if it's digital, it either works or it doesn't. When it was analogue, there was always that fuzzy bit on the outside. That's a technical term, by the way. I'm in central Douglas overlooking a very noisy beer tent, which wasn't there when I moved here. My TV's Wi-Fi connection has been dreadful over TT, as has the 4G on my phone. A message in from Carl. Yes, I remember that Radio Caroline exhibition. It was fantastic. Well, I have to tell you, we got some great help with that in 2008. Howard Parkin from Manx National Heritage, Stephen Harrison, who was in charge of Manx National Heritage, and the curator was Matthew Richardson. It remains to date one of the most popular exhibitions that was on at the House of Menannan. And really, that's the thing. The infrastructure is there for Manx National Heritage. They've got some great stuff. Trouble is there. The funding isn't there. And you have to ask, who's going to solve that? That's it. Back tomorrow with another open line on Manx Radio on The Man in Line. Thanks to Chris on the phones today. Enjoy your Monday. W-I-N-T.